Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Bullseye Saints Hour. It is an inside look at the black and gold. Bullseye, an official tailgate of the New Orleans Saints, with us tonight, Senior Vice President of Football Operations, Assistant General Manager Kai Harley. Welcome again, my friend.
Thanks for having me again.
So, you know, 1-5 is 1-5, and the fact that you've had the ball in four games, really, at the end with a chance to win games is, you know, immeasurable, but it's not what you want to be, right? It is what it is. I hate to go back to Dennis Green. People have quoted Dennis Green for years, but there are a lot of positives to pull out.
Yeah, I mean, certainly I would say that nobody would have expected us to be, you know, 1-5 at this point, you know, but there are signs of progress in yet, you know, someone once said, like, a while ago, years ago, they said, like, nobody cares about the labor. They just want to see the baby. Right. So, you know, we're not playing horseshoes here. So it's all about wins and losses. But within that, you know, we have been close. You know, we've had some progress with, you know, some of our younger players. And we feel like we're just getting ready to break that seal and hopefully get on a little run here at some point.
Fortunately, as your role as assistant general manager, working with Mickey and everybody, fairly healthy. I mean, you've got Isaac Yadam. You've got some players that, you know, but not perfect, but you got Caesar back. You got Taysom back. Got Foster back, you know, Chase Young. I hate when I start listing because then I know I'm going to forget. And so you have not had to use practice squad elevations unless you kind of wanted to most recently.
There's some ebbs and flows with that. You know, this past week we only used one. You know, but the first few weeks of the season, we used two each week. So, you know, this game is a war of attrition. So each week, depending on your injury situation, is going to provide different opportunities for different players. So obviously, you know, three of the players that you mentioned missed the first 4 weeks, you know, of the season, Chase missing five. So, you know, it's good to have those guys back. And certainly let's knock on wood and hope we continue to have good health. We've stayed away from, you know, we've had some season enders, you know, already, but certainly we're healthier than we've been in some previous years.
The 21-day window is open for John Ridgeway. Now, he was an IR guy, not a PUP guy. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the 21, what are your options if you don't put him on the active?
So basically at the end of the 21-day practice period, you have a choice. You either activate the player to your active roster. He stays on reserve injured for the remainder of the year, or you can terminate the player. You know, it's one of those three.
Even though you can, during a season, I guess it would have to be two separate injuries, because you can go on IR two times. You just can't go back-to-back IR, come off, and then go back to IR.
You can. You can.
But it's for the season.
It's no, not in the current scheme.
Really?
Right. So if you remember, I believe that's what we did with Trevor Penning his rookie year. Is I believe he got hurt, we put him on IR, he returned, and then came back. So a lot of times the math doesn't work out from the week's perspective or the game's perspective that they need to be down. But theoretically, if a player starts the season on IR, right, so they got to sit out those first four games, then say you activate them immediately at game five, then they get hurt in game six.
You can put them back on.
Then you can put them back on IR. And then four games later, after game 10, they can come back, you know, as long as you have, you know, we're limited to 8 returns.
Right.
So as long as you have one of those returns available, that can happen. But I would say that that's not something that, that happens very often.
This would be because he came, he started practicing with Taysom and Foster. They've played in 2 games, so that decision time is at least on the horizon.
Yeah, we have one more week.
One more week.
Before we have to make a decision. So we can make a decision this week for this week's game, but we'd have to make a decision before next week's game.
This might feel a little weird, but when you don't have any international games, you don't have any of the primetime, does the team have any say in its bye week?
No. No, I mean the league.
If you had international games, you would a little bit, wouldn't you?
You can ask. That doesn't mean that that you will receive. You know. So certainly, when we've had some international games, there's been times where we've wanted our bye immediately afterwards. I would say the league will wait that for you, but there's no guarantee that they'll give it to you.
And this is not a question, you don't have to answer it. I'm just not a fan of the where one team has it week 5, one team week 8, one team week 12, one team week, it's not kind of equitable, and it feels like it could be equitable for the NFC South to kind of be, you know, around the same time. But it's, you know, yours have been week 11, week 12, week 11, week 14, and then you go back to week 6, week 6, they're wherever you are. Now, I know they love that Atlanta game.
Yeah.
It's like Alabama-LSU. You get your bye, and you play Alabama-LSU. And the NFL goes, well, where's that Atlanta game? All right, bye.
Yeah.
It feels like that way.
Yeah, I mean, it's another situation where you control the controllables. And, you know, you never can control when your bye comes. And you know, preferably if you had your choice in the matter, you'd probably want it mid-season every year. So, you know, you can take your inventory and figure out what you need for the stretch run, you know, without having too many games on the front end or the back end, if you have it, you know, early versus late. But at the end of the day, you can't control that. So when the schedule comes out, you look at it and you sort of see where your opponents are and how many teams are you playing off of their byes and,
right,
you know, who are you playing off of yours and that sort of thing. But it just becomes another landmine to navigate.
The trade deadline is November 4th. By the way, Michael Parenton's birthday is November 2nd. Don't want you to forget that.
Yeah.
And so I'm not crazy. I'm not. I know we're not going to sit here and talk about the trade deadline a great deal, but you do have to prepare. You have to have a list of no, you know, because you're going to get calls. So you have to be, irrespective of whether you want to do anything, you have to be ready.
Yeah, I mean, that's the nature of our jobs, right? So every year, you know, whether you're doing great or whether you're not doing not so great, you're going to have to be prepared for what opportunities may present themselves. Certainly, you know, you look on the horizon and see what players may be available that may be able to help you, you know, that you might want to trade for. And then obviously you'll get some calls on your own players, and you have to decide whether the value is worth pulling the trigger on it. But it's certainly an exercise that you go through every season.
Take a quick break. This is the Bullseye Saints Hour. Mike Haas talking with Senior Vice President of Football Operations, Assistant General Manager Kai Harley. We're back after this on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. Welcome back. This is the Bullseye Saints Hour, an inside look at the black and gold. Bullseye, the official tailgate of the New Orleans Saints, talking with Senior Vice President of Football Operations and Assistant General Manager Kai Harley in his second year as that role. Been with the team for 18 and... We talk about it all the time, but the margins, and you're a former accountant, margins in the NFL are so small. I don't know how much football you watched a few weeks ago. The Rams are playing San Francisco. There's almost no way the Rams will lose the game, right? They fumble at the 1. I mean, going in for what was going to be the winning touchdown, and, you know, they end up losing in overtime. Last night, Washington has it 3rd-and-1 late. I bet their winning probability at that point was 90%+.
Yeah.
And they fumble the ball, and Chicago, your next opponent, takes it down and wins. I mean, that the difference between 1-5 and 3-2 is so small.
Yes.
And I'm not making excuses. I know you're not going to either.
No.
It
no.
just is.
No, like the reality of it is that the talent differential from team to team isn't significantly greater than the other. Like, our league has parity, right? And I think that contributes to the popularity of our sport. Is every year 32 teams think they have a shot to make the playoffs, and all you want to do is get to the dance and you have a shot. And the number of teams that go from worst to first or middle of the pack or first to last, you know, it happens pretty frequently. You know, every year we, you know, typically have a quarter to 30% of the teams every year are new playoff teams than the prior year. So wherever you can find your advantages and the margins, you know, behooves you. And these games come down to final scores, right? So we've lost a number of one-score games, you know, this year. And yet, look, I've been here long enough to say, like, you know, you look back to our 2008 season, you know, we were 8-8 and we lost a lot of close games. And, you know, our edict going into the following season was we need to finish, right? We need to find a way to finish these games, finish these blocks, finish these drives, finish these games in order to get where we wanted to go. And that was, you know, a whole off season of focusing on that one thing. That's what prevented us from getting where we wanted to the year before. And we didn't want to allow that to happen, you know, for a subsequent season. And fortunately enough, things worked out pretty well that next season.
13-0, Super Bowl championship. Yes. Remember it well. Three of your next four on the road, trade deadline, all that stuff. This will be a closed ranks kind of time. I mean, you've seen teams, you know, point fingers. This is when you can lose locker rooms. This is a very important time.
Yeah, and that's where you lean on the character of the individuals that you brought into the organization, the character of the individuals that are still in the organization, whether you're talking about the Cam Jordans, the DeMario Davises, or the, you know, Alvin Kamaras. You know, these guys have played a lot of football. They've seen the highs, they've seen the lows, and they know how to prepare for a game, and they know how to tune out the noise. And look, this generation of players, you know, that are coming into the league, it's different than 20 years ago. When you talk about the media, you talk about social media, and the number of voices that they're hearing, you know, that can be hard. You know, and to have someone who's experienced those things to say, hey, you know, sometimes you need to turn it off or don't focus on that. You know, it's good to have other people to lean on who have been through those same experiences.
I mean, it's early. You haven't even played a division game yet, right? I mean, that part, don't even get me started on that scheduling aspect. That drives me nuts. But it's just about weathering the storm right now.
Look, contrary to the weathering the storm analogy, I'll just say it's about constant improvement and looking to get better. And what you're always looking for is you're looking to get the most out of your players, the most out of your team. And whatever that bar is for you, we want to push you to reach that. You know, and there's a measuring stick every week, and we got something to measure against on how we're going to move forward. And we're in a constant race to improve. There's a lot of teams that start off fast and they might win three games and then lose three games in a row, and now all of a sudden panic sets in. Or conversely, there's teams that lose three and then all of a sudden get on a run and are there in December and January. But whether you start off slow, start off fast, you consistently want to look for ways to improve, because that's the only way you're going to put the best product out on the field.
1-0 begins on Sunday in Chicago. Good luck.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
When we come back, we'll talk with veteran, 2-time Super Bowl winning safety, and Louisiana native Justin Reed on the Bullseye Saints Hour here on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, welcome back to the Bullseye Saints Hour, the inside look at the black and gold Bullseye, the official tailgate of the New Orleans Saints, and joined by Justin Reed, first-year safety, Dutchtown, Geismar, Dutchtown High School, Louisiana native. How are you doing, sir? Welcome to the show.
Man, I'm great. I'm excited to be here, Mike. Appreciate you giving me the opportunity to come on board with you.
Got to ask you just a little bit. Have you been following Dutchtown? 4-1, 2-0, just beat Santamont. Do you follow it a little bit still?
Yeah, you know what? Times have changed, but not much has changed. Still whooping up on the Santamont Gators. I love that. And, you know, the guys at that program are always fun to watch. My brother was actually there. He got inducted into the Dutchtown's Athletic Hall of Fame about a week or two ago. So that was pretty cool.
So, you know, now I got to ask, are you there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. I actually beat him to it.
Okay.
Slight flex.
I want to talk about the position first. So you come into camp, it's you and Tyron, Terrell Burgess. So between you, you know, you got like four Super Bowl rings, and now, you know, you're with Jonas, who's playing great, Terrell, Kool-Aid, Quincy, Jordan Howden, Alante's now like the old, he's the old guy in the cornerback room. It feels like your role has kind of changed a little bit, right?
Yeah. And it has. And, you know, that's what the NFL is. It's gone from a role to where we had so much experience on the back end, and very quickly, we just turned very young, right? Very, very quickly, especially after that first game when Julian got hurt. And, you know, there's some pros and cons to that. One of the cons is, you know, when you have a bunch of young players on the field, there is going to be some growing pains that's going to happen with that, right? Because experience is the best teacher. But it also is just a major opportunity for young guys to get on the field early, make a place for themselves, start making some plays, build some confidence. And, you know, down the road, that experience that they're getting now is going to be extremely valuable. And Jonas has really taken that by the reins. He's played exceptional. You know, there's still going to be mistakes here or there, but they're all mistakes that I don't see that he would continue to make over and over again. That's just one of those experience things that I talked about earlier. And my role with the team has migrated into still being a role model by my play first, and secondly, just making sure I'm getting these young guys ready to play and that they're confident and know what the checks are, and just get to go out there and play fast and see if I can take some things off their plates so they don't think as much and can just play more quickly.
And I don't think there's a better analogy that it gets said, but the ability to play fast, that half a beat of thinking is a lifetime in pro football, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the difference. That's where, you know, you hear the term separation, good for offense, bad for defense. That's where separation comes from. You know, a guy pauses for a second too long and then, you know, he might miss a gap or a guy gets a step on him or whatever it is.
And they need somebody who's kind of been there. And so for people that for these young guys, I'm like, oh, we got the Super Bowl champ who's coming. And so he doesn't, but they don't maybe have know that you went through 4-12. You went through 4-13 at Houston. You understand, you know, what it is to fight through these tough times and come out on the other end.
Yeah, I've lived every side of the coin. Been on great teams that fell short, been on teams that struggled through the season, and of course been on Super Bowl teams. And one of the things that's most obvious to me through my experience is the culture of each of those systems and where is that culturally, right? And, you know, you hear head coaches a lot speak about building the culture, but as a player and as one of the guys, like your veterans build the culture of the team, as a guy who's been in different cultures, having the right culture is critical. I mean, it's so, it can't be understated enough how big having the right culture is Even in moments like this, that if you build the right culture, you have the right process, even if you're not getting the result now, you build on it and you build on it, you do it the right way, the results will come and your foundation will be stronger because of it. And, you know, that's really what Kellen is preaching. That's what our veteran players are preaching. That's what I'm preaching. It's just continue to buy into the process, do things the right way time and time again. The results are going to come. We're going to continue to build this ship right. And, you know, everything that we want to do this year is still in front of us.
You arrived from a team, you know, obviously with the culture in Kansas City. What was your first impression of the culture here that had been built by Mickey and Sean and winning year after year? What was your first impression of the culture here?
Well, everything is just so new. I mean, it was new faces all over the place. Like, there, from my experience stepping into the building, because there was a new head coach, a new defensive coordinator, half the roster was new faces. You know what I mean? There was a little bit of a culture, you know, that Cam and DeMario brought, but there's so many new faces across the board, staff and player wise, that, you know, it was really just open for the culture to be built. Right. So when I stepped into the building, it was interesting to be able to be a part of that process and got to have one-on-one conversations with Coach Moore and other people in the front office, as well as the veteran players, about how we want to build this thing and how we want it to look, and just committing fully to that. So, you know, it was new, you know, everything was new. And, you know, what comes with newness is some growing pains, which I think everyone understood. But we're not allowing that to be an excuse for us. It's just understanding what comes with it, but still attacking it each and every day and building it the right way.
A couple more football questions, and I want to talk about all the foundation work that you're doing. And clearly, from a defensive unit, there are things that I know that you can't tolerate. And when teams come up and score their first two possessions and to put your, you know, you're fighting uphill, I don't know you that well, but I know you well, and I've been around a long time. That's driving you guys nuts.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely unacceptable. You know, I mean, you can't put yourself behind the eight ball. We can win any game in the NFL, but there's not many teams winning games in the NFL that are consistently giving up 14 points in the first quarter. It's just not something that is what winning teams and winning cultures do. And it's not a talent issue. It's not a talent issue. It's not a scheme issue. It's an execution thing, right? It's just about taking the concepts and the pattern match that we do during practice and bringing it with us on Sunday. Right now, it feels like it's taking a bit too long for guys to settle in. And again, I know there's so much youth on the field, and it is different from my perspective as a guy who's played long enough now that the games literally feel like practice. Like, my heart rate doesn't get sped up on a regular season game. But still, being able to translate the things that we do in practice to the game, and, you know, not letting it take a whole quarter before we settle in and start playing strong defense. You look at our second half defense through the year, I mean, it's been outstanding. But we have to be able to do that the entire length of the game. And it's not acceptable to keep allowing 14 points in the first quarter.
And as you well know, 1-5, you know, new head coach, 3 of your next 4 on the road, it doesn't get easier. And so the noise outside is going to get louder, and it's going to be so important for you yourself and the Cams and, you know, the DeMarios, you know, the close ranks and shut out the noise from outside.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and everyone has an opinion. Everyone's allowed to have an opinion. But what matters to us inside of the building are just the people between the walls, right? And you get into a lot of trouble. As I said, I've been on teams that have been successful, and I've been on teams that haven't been. And one of the marks of a strong culture and successful teams is being able to keep things between the walls of the building and not allow outside noise to create distractions and influence that ends up being toxic and cancerous to the culture of the team, right? So we know that people are going to have opinions. Everyone has a right to have an opinion. We know some of our fans are upset with where we are right now. We're upset with where we are right now, but we're going to continue to build things the right way. We're not going to allow it to become a toxic environment, because if that happens, then you just end up wasting a year, you waste a season, and you don't stand a chance.
Let's pause 10 seconds to let stations identify themselves here on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. When we come back, we're going to talk about jreedindeed.com and all of the great things that Justin Reed is doing. This is the Bullseye Saints Hour on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. Welcome back to the Bullseye Saints Hour. Mike Hoss, along with Justin Reed, Saints safety. Bullseye, the official tailgate of the New Orleans Saints. And there are foundations, but I don't know that I've seen a lot of foundations that go New Orleans, Baton Rouge, Houston, Kansas City. That's where you've been, right? And so that's where you are. I guess talk about how Jay Reed, indeed, just as it's spelled, .com, how it kind of came about and what your goals were.
Yeah, so the motivation behind my foundation kind of follows my journey and my life story. Like I said, grew up in Prairieville, played at Dutchtown. Wasn't exactly the most tech savvy coming out of high school. I was always good with numbers at math and stuff. Horrible at writing papers, but I was always good with numbers. But I wasn't a tech guy by any means. Not at all. Ended up committing to Stanford. And there's a couple of things that I noticed from going from Louisiana to Stanford. Some of the things being, one, I felt completely out of my element when I stepped into my first coding class, because every student at Stanford is required to take a coding class regardless of your major, doesn't matter what it is. Felt completely out of the water, but I learned after about a week of doing it that I was like, hey, you know what? This isn't nearly as intimidating or scary as I originally thought it was. That exposure, keyword there, exposure, that exposure to it really just made everything so much simpler. And I found out that not only did I kind of like it, but I was actually good at it. And I would have never known that if I wasn't exposed to it. And then the second thing I noticed between, where I grew up with the kids that I grew up with and the kids that were at Stanford University was that the kids weren't that different. You know what I mean? Like everyone is pretty much the same. But I did notice that some access to resources and some upbringing, that was really the difference. And I wanted to be able to bridge that gap. I wanted to be able to remove some of the obstacles to access to education. I wanted to be able to teach kids some life skills and skills that would be able to serve them a lifetime and help them have hope and have future and not feel like they have to go to the streets to find answers to how to survive. We try and do it in fun ways. We bring athletics into it. We bring music into it. We do programs where kids get to make their own beats. We allow them to build games. One of the things kids really enjoy is on our cybersecurity chapter, we have the kids break into a fake bank that we set up, and they really enjoy doing that, but they're learning what cybersecurity is and where the downfalls are on the security side, as well as what people do to attack them, so that they learn those skills on both sides of the fence. And we make it fun. We allow the kids to have a great time. We're really proud of the program that we built. It followed me everywhere that I've gone, Houston, Louisiana, Kansas City, and we like to stay connected to the communities that we touch.
So one that is happening now is Fully Charged, a partnership with Best Buy, Teen Tech Center, New Orleans Public Library. It's October 4th, obviously through December, but it's like six sessions. And again, coding is one of them. And I'm with you. Like, I'm old. So to me, coding might as well be Latin. But I watch these, I go to STEM, things in the summer with young kids. And it's like, I almost say they're like young defensive backs. They don't know what they don't know. And so coding to them, they're like, I don't know what it is. Let's give it a shot. And they're not intimidated because it's an intimidating world. And so in Fully Charged, they develop their own video game and coding is a part of it. And they can sign up through jreedindeed.com.
Yeah, they can sign up through our website. It's probably the most straightforward way to do it, jreedindeed.com. We've had tremendous feedback from students that had a little bit of experience, students that had no experience. From every stage of a starting point, we've had tremendous feedback on what these kids have learned. And we have a lot of repeat campers because they enjoyed their experience so much. They got to learn a lot of things. And we got to put them on, you know, in a space where they got to connect with their peers and allow that creativity to flourish.
And my guess is you had me at develop your own video game. Right? But well done. Well, you know, and I don't know, I apologize for not knowing the impact of what this means, but you were the Week 6 NFLPA community MVP. I guess tell me a little bit about what that means.
Yeah, I mean, that's a tremendous honor. We get a nice grant from the NFLPA for being named that. And it was as a result of our fully charged program that we do during the school year. So we do multiple activations. We do holiday stuff. We do holiday giveaways. The last 2 years, we gave away a car during Christmas. But our during the year program, we like to get ingrained and do our fully charged program, which is taking place at the Teen Tech Center at the New Orleans Public Library, where we teach them. Most recently was a quick game on building a character and using facial recognition and that software there to have their game character track their face and movement and create a game out of that. So students did different things with that. It's kind of like a Snapchat filter. If you think about the filters that are put on your face, we allowed them to create their own filter and then make a game out of that. And then, you know, that helps us fund our program that we do during the summertime, which is our Tackling Tech Summer Science Summer program, which is where we really get granular into the nitty-gritty and do a whole bunch of fun things in robotics and coding, activations, have guest speakers come. It's a really, really great thing. We're really proud of it.
And that has, you know, has is underway in Kansas City, looking to launch in New Orleans for 2026, and which is awesome because, and I would assume that part of your message to these young people, boys and girls, is that they don't, I don't know if they understand the need for computer science, for computer technology, for cybersecurity, that they're talking about. This is, you know, this isn't just something to do in the summer. There's a great need from a professional situation out there for them and a future.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of our things, we have Microsoft as a partner, and one of the things I really believe in is that if a kid is proficient in Excel, you know how to work a data sheet, you will get a job anywhere in the country. Anywhere. I mean, that being proficient in Excel is more powerful than some college degrees. And on top of that, we also teach them how to work with AI. I mean, the modern age that we live in is everything is tech driven, from your iPhone to allowing computers to, you know, do a lot of the heavy lifting for you, that if you know how to communicate with them properly, I mean, the sky is the limit at what you're able to do. And we believe that, you know, you don't grow when you're doing things that you've always done before. You grow when you try new things and you get out of your element. And that's part of what we push too, is because we want kids to be confident and try new experiences.
It is a public-private endeavor because, quite frankly, if it were just public, you know, it wouldn't happen. There's not enough, and it is what it is. And so you need that public-private partnership. And coming up on December 8th, you have teed up. It's going to be at the 504 right there off of Howard Avenue, and that will help, if I'm right, fund the Tackling Tech Summer program that you want to start in New Orleans for 26, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Every dollar, so we operate in three states, four cities. Every dollar raised in that state stays in that state. So every dollar raised in New Orleans will stay in New Orleans. It'll be fed right back into New Orleans and Baton Rouge communities to help equip these kids to have a stronger chance at a brighter future.
That's December 8th. Check it out. Go look to jreedindeed.com. So, do you play golf?
Oh man, I have a major golf addiction.
Okay.
Huge, huge golf addiction. I play it a lot. You know, the guy, my teammates know about it.
So, take out. I'm going to be, I think it's fair. We're going to take Jake Haner off the list. I don't think it's fair.
Yeah,
this
Jake
guy's
is
a plus,
cold.
he's
Jake
a
is
plus
cold.
one, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, so are you pretty good?
I'm about a minus six.
Ah,
So I'm
very good.
decent. I'm decent. Yeah, I can keep up pretty well. I can hit the ball a long way. I need to work on my putting. My putting is what's keeping me from getting a scratch right now.
Well,
But I'm pretty good.
final question. You have two choices. You can make a game sealing interception, right? Deep pass, you make the game sealing interception, or Blake Rupe tweaks a hamstring in the first half and you kick the game winning 45-yard field goal to win the game. What do you pick?
I would never wish an injury on Blake.
No, I know. No, he just it's a tweak.
I'll take the interception because you know my primary spot. But boy, I tell you what, if I got to kick a field goal 45 yards and win a game, that would be the most insane feeling ever.
When I first heard that you were kicking off, you know, I was kind of like, oh, well, wait a minute, who was hurt? But then it kind of made sense that you get an extra defender.
No, it's like a cheat code. The way that the dynamic kickoff rules are right here, it's like a cheat code. Like, yeah, when I did it last season, a couple of games, I had like three tackles on kickoff because I'm just running down there unblocked. Yeah.
What you're doing is great. Continue. J-R-E-I-D, J Reed, Indeed, INDEED.com. Get into the foundation, get into the, you know, really fully charged and everything that's out there. And, you know, best of luck in Chicago. And we really appreciate your time.
Appreciate you.
Coming up next, we will talk with a longtime member of the Saints organization, Debbie Gallagher, and hear her journey through breast cancer and an event with a name that only New Orleans would create here on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Bullseye Saints Hour. It is an inside look at the black and gold. Bullseye, the official tailgate of the New Orleans Saints, and we are joined by Debbie Gallagher. She is the executive assistant to the general manager, thus being Mickey Loomis, in her 28th year. Unbelievable, because she looks like she's so young, and she could never be that, you know, experienced, if you will. How about that? Well done.
Thank you.
Obviously, October Breast Cancer Awareness. You are 5.5 year breast cancer survivor. Congratulations. Tell me, I guess, you know, you were doing everything right. You were getting in. People get annuals. Yours was almost right to the day, right?
Correct.
You do it every, you know, it's on the calendar. Boom.
Right.
You're doing everything correct.
Correct. So back in 2019, I went for my yearly physical and I went for the mammogram. And I thought everything was fine. And they said, it doesn't look good. I want you to come back. I went back, had the other echo done and another, I guess, biopsy after that because she saw something that was a suspect. I went ahead and had that checked out. And the words came out, I think it's cancer. So that's something no one wants to hear. But I was on top of all my mammograms, my yearly physicals. So it started then. I went through the chemo, radiation. And thank God I had the support. I was working with a great group of guys. So you need a village whenever you have cancer. I'm always about that. And it takes a village. And I was here at the Saints, and my guys were like, look, we're behind you 100%. And I'm like, if I have to lose my hair, you just don't understand. That was the biggest part for me. And as a woman, it is. So I kept telling my doctors, if you could only get something to so that we don't lose our hair, we'd be fine with it. With that being said, Sean came up to me and said, look, we're shaving our heads. If you have to take chemo, we're doing it as a team. We're a village. We're here to support you. And with that, I went on. I did that. COVID hit. I was home for the whole chemo radiation session. So that was a blessing to me. And then I came back after that, and I was fine. But my message to the women is, please stay on top of your physicals, your mammograms. And if the word comes back, it's cancer, it's not a death sentence. You have to take it, embrace it, and trust in your doctors, number one.
By the way, Sean is Sean Payton.
Yes, Sean Payton. I'm sorry.
No, it's all right. It's, you know, it's been a little bit of time. Telling your kids.
Telling my kids was very hard. I said, I want to FaceTime each one of them, and I wanted them to see my face, to know that I wasn't scared, that we were going to fight this as a family, and that's how they That's how they came back at me as, look, Mom, we're going to take this and we're going to run with it. It's going to be fine.
When you went back the second time, which really was just kind of a protocol, correct, your husband said he wanted to come with you.
He did. And I thought that was weird. I said, you don't need to come with me because every visit that I went on before this, everything was fine. But by the grace of God, he was there. And when they called me and said, I think we need to do a biopsy, it could be cancer, I said, hold on. I said, I can't process this. My husband came in and we were there together and were told what we needed to do, the next steps.
Did he ever tell you, because it was a kind of a scheduled protocol, kind of next step thing, that why he wanted to come to that one?
He never did say that, but I thought that was just so weird that of all visits, he came with me for that one. Never, ever has he ever been to another visit prior to that.
Yeah, that's, you know, husbands have a unique, I'm not going to give us credit.
I'm not giving us credit.
Don't get me wrong, but you did mention the team, Dr. John Amos and many, many others, because immediately it was breast surgeon, plastic surgeon, oncologist, radiologist. You beyond the Saints organization, there is a new team as well that you'll be dealing with.
Correct. And that's the one thing I didn't understand when you have cancer, that there is a team of doctors. I thought I was going to one doctor, and then Dr. Amos said, oh, I have set up for a team of doctors, which is amazing.
You made the decision to have the double mastectomy.
Correct.
Tough decision. Where is that in the kind of?
That was the first thing I thought of. Is I spoke to a couple of my friends who have gone through prior to myself, and they all said that's what they choose. Being our age, it was something you wanted to do to make sure that you get everything out at the time that you've given the diagnosis.
And doctors have since told you
it was the best decision I made, because they saw something in the other breast that was a suspect. And they came out and told my husband after surgery, by the grace of God, she did everything right.
Yet, you did everything right before and still got it, right?
Correct.
And so, believe me, we don't like going to the dentist, right? We don't like going to the urologist. We don't like prostate exam, you know, and that's for us, by the way.
All right.
But this is your life. This is your body. You don't get to play defense.
Correct.
You have to play offense. And I would assume that's part of your message to everybody. If you wait, you are not helping yourself.
Correct. Stay on top of everything. If you even feel something you think is not right, just go have it checked out. It's better to have that message to yourself when you feel better about it.
And we wear pink in October, and the field is painted, and it's breast cancer awareness. But there's so much more that even the organization does. It's not a month, right? It's an annual battle for a lot of people, because I don't know anybody that isn't touched in some way by that word cancer.
Correct. It's so true, because I just went through it with my husband's brother. Actually had pancreatic cancer and just passed away from it. And we were like, this is so weird that cancer is prevalent all over now.
New Orleans, we have a lot of great events and well-meaning, great causes and great names. And you have a one coming up on Thursday. I'm not going to say the name because you are going to say the name.
Okay, great. There is October the 16th, Thursday. There's an event put on by the Professional Women's Builders Association of New Orleans, and it's called Booze and Boobs, and it's going to be held at the Alexander Room on the terrace in Metairie, Louisiana. So there's tickets still available. If you go on the website, they'll have something that can give you more information.
The thing about journeys is there's a person who will hear this who will go, says, I'm late, I need to go do this. Or I have felt something weird, and so the journeys are important because it reminds people to play offense and go get it checked out. So continued beautiful success, and it's a great story.
My motto is cancer will not defy me.
You have two mottos.
Oh yes, the beast has been released. That was the main one.
Well, that's our show. Thanks to Charlie Long in the booth. We'll look for you next week after the Saints take on the Chicago Bears. This is the Bullseye Saints Hour on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly you know what why people it's not, outside of Cleveland you know, think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.